Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. What is the Ukraine conflict really all about? We're told this is about democracy. Others say it's about the rules-based order, whatever that means. In fact, there is nothing noble about this conflict. It's just another huge grift. Those in power want to keep it that way. To discuss this and more, I'm joined by my guests, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we cross to George Samueli. He is a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTubes and Locals. All right, let's start out with George. As I said in the introduction, George, I've always believed, and you and I have talked about this at great length, that this is just another huge grift on the heels of Afghanistan. And we all know the phrase, whatever it takes. Well, I think that we're missing the second half. Whatever it takes for me to make a lot of money, because I think that's the full sentence of this propaganda effort to keep the conflict going. It's no coincidence. You know, we run out of ammo. Oh, we have to buy and make new ammo. Okay, new contracts going out. Oh, in the meantime, we don't really want to do it, but cluster munitions, which basically they want to get rid of so they can buy the next generation of munitions. I mean, it seems to work for everybody, doesn't it? Go ahead, George.
No, that's absolutely right. And it's an aspect of this war that has received very little attention. You know, if we go back to 2014 and the Biden family and the people around the Biden family, there was a reason why they battened onto Ukraine. They saw this as easy money. I mean, we know Hunter Biden, with no background at all in the energy industry, got himself a very nice gig with Burisma. Now, we're also learning now increasingly from the disclosures in the Republican-led House that the Hunter Biden and his father and I think other members of the family also received substantial amount of money from Ukraine and specifically from Burisma. So here we have this this nexus of the Biden family and Ukraine. And then, of course, this war is extremely profitable. You're talking about these weapon systems and all the various belligerent states in Eastern Europe. You know, they're giving away their weaponry, and they know that this is all going to be replaced, and they're going to be replaced by the Americans. So certain people are, of course, making an enormous amount of money, you know, all the arms contractors. Certain other people are not making money. And what we're seeing in Europe, as the European industry is being essentially wiped off the face of the earth by the United States, they aren't doing well. This is something that was highlighted by Viktor Orban this weekend. And so, you know, it's a grift for some, but it also means, you know, just being wiped out of existence for others.
Yeah, and Martin, I forgot another important party in all of this, the black market, okay, where these weapons can be found all over the world now. We've had many, many reports of that. Also, unconfirmed, I want to say this again, unconfirmed reports that the Minister of Defense, Ukraine's Minister of Defense daughter, bought a $7 million house in France. Unconfirmed, I've only seen a report, haven't seen it corroborated. I wouldn't be surprised if I've come across numerous other reports how the European real estate industry seems to have a favorite buyer right now. They come from Ukraine, Martin.
Yeah, a lot of people could be forgiven for missing that story because mainstream media did not seize it. It was very much a fringe story of a minister spending $7 million on a nice little pad in the south of France. Nice money if you can earn it. But I've been banging on myself in my own columns for at least 9 months about this idea of arms being resold from Ukraine. And I think this is a story which will emerge the very day that the war stops. You know, I think that's a huge business. But I think also that just the industrial military complex, I mean, Washington is a swamp of made up of industrial military complex and big pharma. And as long as those industries are being fed hugely, the whole machine works very nicely for whoever's in power. But aside from that, I have also been saying for a very long time that I think there is something else about Ukraine and the Biden family. And I think, you know, George touched on the point of energy firms paying the Biden family, Hunter Biden. I think there's a lot more there that we haven't touched upon. I think there's a lot more corruption, a lot more graft that the Biden family are trying to cover up. And that is probably the main reason for actually going to war in the first place is that you cover up. The problem with all these corrupt deals, you know, the problem with this swamp that you create for yourself, and I really do believe that Joe Biden for a very, very long time has been building up his revenues by looking for such low-hanging fruit around the world. Ukraine is perfect for that. You know, you just, as a vice president, you just have meetings with people, and it's part of the culture there just to leave a suitcase of cash in your hotel room when you return after a nice meal. You know, he's been preparing for this for a very, very long time. He's been building up friends in the intelligence community to protect him, etc. And so we shouldn't really be surprised by this. But the problem with all this is that the moment the war stops, all those relationships stop. And all the brown stuff comes out. And that's really the story for me, for Biden, and in this campaign, and even the campaign leading up to his presidency, is cover-ups. When we look back at this history of Joe Biden, we'll remember him almost taking us to a third world war with Russia. We'll remember him coming as close to a war with China, how he's messed up in the Middle East, how he now America no longer controls the price of energy. We remember these things, but we'll also remember a culture of cover-ups that we've never seen before on this scale of intelligence community, media, basically keeping a president in power because it suits them in the longer term, and insisting that no journalist can do their job, even if they wanted to. You know, the story of the Biden laptop is gonna run and run.
Yeah. And because of the sweetheart deal they gave him on other issues, in the investigation continues, so he can't be put on, be forced to give testimony, ongoing investigation.
But also, we can't afford for Hunter Biden to go to jail. Because if Hunter Biden goes to jail, then he has a long line of journalists coming to visit.
Well, I think that if Hunter Biden is going to say, if I'm going to go to jail, I'm not going to be the only one. Okay? Exactly. I mean, yeah. I think that's fair enough there.
Who's he going to take down?
But George, it's so interesting is that if you look at Western media about Ukraine up until January of 2022, the most corrupt country in Europe. Okay. Yeah. I mean, on and on and on about this here. And then after all this money has been spent, should we have an audit? No audit. That's a Putin talking point. Okay. I mean, there's one reason why you don't want an audit. You don't want people to know where it's going. Okay. Just as Martin said, this is a lot of easy money, and it's a grift that just keeps on giving as long as the conflict continues, George.
Well, that's right. And I think that's why there is such a great incentive for this conflict to continue. A lot of people are making a lot of money. And I think, as Martin says, if the war were to come to an end, there would indeed have to be inquiries about the origins of the war and the Biden's family's involvement with Ukraine. But Ukraine has really been at the center of American politics for quite some time. I mean, if you remember what happened with Trump in 2019, Trump had basically, he'd found out that there had been some very serious grifting going on with the Biden family and Ukraine. He wanted to learn more about it, and he started asking questions. And then eventually he got onto Zelensky and said to him, well, find out what the hell has been going on. And this
got impeached for it.
He got impeached for it. And it is quite an extraordinary fact that the Democrats went into a total panic mode when they found out that Trump was really digging into what would have been going on. He got impeached. And then the whole thing could kind of was swept under the rug. The Republicans are trying to make something out of it, but they're not getting very much coverage because the media are not going to give any airtime to Republicans, and they say, oh, that's all just simply propaganda, Republican Trump propaganda. But it is an interesting aspect of this that the media are absolutely desperate to cover up the connection between the U.S. government and Ukraine. And so this is
but like it's really interesting. It's really interesting. I like what George said there. I mean, there's every interest on their part to cover up a Biden-Ukraine connection, but they went hog crazy over a Trump-Russia connection that never existed for 3 years.
Yeah,
Martin.
Yeah, and I think that's probably got something to do with relations. I touched upon this point earlier. I think when you look at Trump and Biden, Biden is the one who's been a senator since 1972. Biden has been investing in relationships in key parts of the deep state. And I think he's built up a huge war chest of intelligence officers, FBI and CIA officers, retired and working, and military officials to buffer him, to create this buffer zone around him. I mean, if we look at the Hunter Biden laptop story, you know, this is a story which is going to gain momentum, I think, between now and the elections, because even, as George rightly points out, you know, most mainstream media don't want to touch it, but they're having to. They can't ignore it anymore. You know, and if you look at the origins, this started in 2020. This started in the election run-up that when Biden was a candidate. And, you know, it was broken by the deputy political editor of the New York Post, a lady called Joe Morris, who in 2020 wrote this great story about the laptop and exposed it. And the main issue that she focused on were the emails which linked the Biden family to the energy firm in the Ukraine, the payments, and also the Chinese company as well. Let's not forget that the Bidens were looking at the possibility of selling market space to Chinese energy firms within America. This is explosive stuff. Within hours or days, this story was destroyed by mainstream media because Politico published a letter signed by 51 intelligence officers, which said this was Russia disinformation. Now, this is during the campaign period. And, you know, most mainstream journalists even today are admitting that this was pulled off by the Biden campaign. Biden campaign basically wheeled out all these friends and said, we have to destroy this story. We have to send a message to the big media guns. So let's choose a fringe media player to send that message for us. Politico was perfect. And it worked. The message to all the big media editors was, don't touch this story.
What was interesting as we approach the break here, George, you and I have talked about this in the past, is that when they do mention it, they mention the salacious parts, the hookers, the drugs, the lifestyle, but they never want to talk about the business side of it. And that creates empathy because he was under the influence. You know, we have to have compassion. Real quick before we go to the break.
No, that's exactly right. But what's also striking is that those 51 intelligence officials, former intelligence, they were at the highest level of the intelligence apparat in the United States. These were former CIA chiefs, NSA chiefs, and so on. To this day, they enjoy security clearance. I mean, they will get regular briefings on intelligence, so they enjoy all that, even though they absolutely lied, stone-cold liars, about this Russian
disinformation. It comes with the profession. Comes with the profession, George. All right, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition to remind you we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to George in Budapest. George, it's really quite interesting, too, going along with the grift and who wants this conflict to continue, is that there are two major candidates, well-known to the public, Donald Trump and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Both have been very vocal in their opposition to the way the Biden administration is proceeding. And that makes them, they're already targets. Now they're, you know, extra targets. I don't know if that makes any sense right there. But Trump, you know, he says that he wants to stop the killing. Well, that sounds pretty reasonable. Okay, he's against war, but he doesn't take a side. And Bobby Kennedy, which, you know, I've looked at his lineage, he was a Russiagator, everybody, let's face it, Bobby Kennedy was a Russiagator, and he seemed to have educated himself. Maybe he was watching us, maybe he was listening to Gray Zone, who knows, okay? But he does have a very different tune, makes him an extra target. And we saw this last week with his quote-unquote anti-Semitism. This is a substitute to make sure he can't even get within arm's length of power. And of course, we have Donald Trump under 4 indictments, if I'm not mistaken. Right. We're going to lose count soon, everybody. We're going to lose count of all the indictments. Well, mark my words, George.
Well, that's very interesting. You put it very well, because there are two basic ways in which the political establishment takes out its enemies. You either bring up kind of the charge of anti-Semitism, you know, racism, which is, that's how they took out Pat Buchanan when he ran.
Jeremy Corbyn,
a very good case. Exactly. There's no evidence for it. You just wheel this out and anti-Semitism, or you practice lawfare. And so with Trump now, he, as we discuss this, he has 4 trials coming up between now and the election, at least 4, because it was likely to be something from Georgia, and then there's a lot of other stuff possible. So it's very hard to see, first of all, how he can campaign while he's going from one trial to another. It's not even obvious, because none of these grandstanding prosecutors or judges are going to say, well, let's delay this, let's wait till after the election. No, they want to run it now. I mean, they're desperate to do it. So it's likely that he's just going to be going from one trial to another. You know, well, Monday I'm doing this, and Tuesday I'm there, and, you know, Wednesday somewhere else. I mean, that's the only way that they can do this. And of course, all these are absolutely contrived. I mean, they're all basically being conducted by Democratic prosecutors, and the goal is obvious, that it's just to take him out. And it's said explicitly on MSNBC and CNN, well, you know, Trump can make all this go away. All he has to do is to drop out, just drop out, and it'll go away. I mean, you know, he'll just get a tap on the wrist, you know, he'll plead guilty to a couple of misdemeanors, and that's it. So essentially, the goal is obvious, which is to intimidate him from running. And there's no question. I mean, when he said, particularly on that CNN town hall, when that awful reporter asked him repeatedly, don't you want Ukraine to win? And he said, you know, I want the killing to stop. That was his response. That's not acceptable within the sort of the military industrial complex, the policymaking elite. No, that is absolutely forbidden to talk like that.
Yeah. And Martin, you know, thinking of Trump and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., these are two people that if they're in power, in the case of Trump return to power, Kennedy, if he rises to power, they have some bones to grind with the intelligence community. First of all, with Trump, he was Russiagated by the intelligence community, and we know what happened to the Kennedy family. So, I mean, these two people are the most absolutely the most dangerous people for the establishment and their foreign policy, and particularly the intelligence community. Martin.
Yeah, and let's remember JFK. Many people believe he was assassinated because he stood against big military spending. He wanted to reduce the military spending quite dramatically, and so there is some echoes of the past there with Robert Jr. Kennedy, who I think is actually pretty smart. I mean, I've got a lot of time for him. I do listen to him, but I think ultimately, I think this election is going to boil down to Ukraine war and the mental state of Biden. These are going to be the two major issues. And I think this idea that Trump is going to be popping in and out of courtrooms all the time, I don't think that will bother him. I don't think that will really affect his campaign. He'll get a lot of media time for that. But he's made a couple of blunders. And I'm somewhat concerned that the Biden camp have won one victory on the Ukraine war, in that Trump has rather clumsily revealed what his strategy would be to end the Ukraine war. He said to a journalist, well, look, I'll do two things. I'll basically bluff with Zelensky. I'll tell him we've got no more money, so he has to end it. And at the same time, I'll go to the Russians and tell Putin I'm going to double or triple the military spending. That should scare him into signing. Yeah, you're laughing. But the joke is, if that is your strategy, you don't reveal it to journalists, you know, because it kind of takes away the edge, you know, so you haven't got much of a surprise there. So the Biden camp are probably laughing.
Well, but Martin, and I'm not a Trump defender, okay, but we've heard Trump on almost any possible issue come up with his theory of the moment, and then he changes his mind. George, weigh in on that, because it's interesting what Martin's saying.
Well, I think that he's made a mistake. I think Martin's right. He made a mistake in revealing his strategy. But we had suspected that that's kind of what he had in mind. The problem is that the strategy cannot work. In the first place, if he were to tell Zelensky, we're not giving you another dime, there's going to be a rebellion within his own party, and the Democrats will immediately move to impeach him. I mean, without any question, they're going to move to impeach him. And all they need to do is, you know, peel away 10 to 15 Republicans and, you know, and he's in serious trouble. So that's one thing. The other thing is, what does he tell Putin? And those, you know, we're going to give Ukraine everything that he wants. Well, what else? I mean, what else? I mean, they've already received everything that they want. I mean, is he saying nuclear weapons? Are we going to be, you know, Zelensky, hey, do you want a little small nuclear weapon? We'll provide you with that. So he doesn't really have anything that to use as leverage, because basically the Biden administration has already given Zelensky everything it wanted. So he made a mistake, I agree, that of spelling this out. I mean, he could have just left this up in the air. Hey, I know how to do it, and I will do it. But this strategy, this cannot work.
Yeah, well, the establishment has the ultimate failsafe. I'm going to go to Martin right now. Is someone like Lindsey Graham, if hypothetically Trump were to return to the White House and he did exactly what George was saying, Lindsey Graham would be the first person to want to impeach him. Okay, right. So he doesn't have his part. See, that's Trump's greatest dilemma. He has a huge base, and they worship, and they'll crawl over broken glass for him. But he has an establishment that just loathes him. And you know what the score is there? Trump loses. Martin.
Yeah, but I think there's also a number of swing voters, though, who are sick and tired of the dirty games and the skullduggery of the Biden administration and can see through it. They can see that all these cases, as George points out, are completely contrived, you know, and that the swing voters, they only need to be 5 or 6, 7% for Trump to get it. But I think that the protest vote that we saw before with Trump and Hillary, I think that's going to repeat itself much, much more intensified.
I worry about, Martin, and I throw this to George, I think there's another option. People are just not going to participate. They're going to just, I'm
on the
done.
Biden side. I think
I'm
on the
done.
Biden side. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. You know, considering, you know, again, you know, showing your cards like that, a lot of people just scratching their heads like, why'd you do that? I mean, you had the best thing going for you. I have a plan. OK, I mean, Ronald Reagan did that and he succeeded because he didn't tell anybody. George.
Richard Nixon, famously in 68, he had a secret plan to end the war. No question. I think that the Democrats have another trick up their sleeve, and that is to try to take Trump off the ballot. I mean, if as is likely, as Jack Smith charges Trump with sedition, then they're going to try and take him off the ballot by saying, "Hey, this is a violation of the 14th Amendment," and he wouldn't be able to run. They only need to succeed in a few states. To make this essentially devastating for Trump. And I think, I mean, they're going to try it in every state, but I think that's they're going to do that. But I think that it is true that Trump is rising in the polls as a result of this Democratic lawfare, because they think this is something untoward. This is manifestly unfair to use the government in this way to essentially persecute your political opponent. So it hasn't worked for the Democrats so far. That's why I think they have to go for the next step, which is the take him off the ballot altogether.
Yeah, and Martin, just for good measure, maybe take Biden off the ballot, you know, to show kind of some kind of equality there, and put Gavin Newsom up there, and they'd be more than happy to do something like that. And I'd like to say, we have like 90 seconds left here, they're not afraid of any other Republican in the field. DeSantis, they'll roll him, they'll roll all of them if they were to get the nominee. They'll roll, maybe because they're going to be, you know, there's a demonstration peg. I don't want them to do to me what they did to Trump. I mean, the lesson has been absorbed, Martin.
There are some people, you know, some political analysts in the UK who I follow and I respect are even speculating that they think that Biden doesn't even want to run a second term. You know, he hasn't put any money up for his own campaign. He has this extraordinary arrogance and confidence, possibly because of the number of friends in the intelligence community that are protecting him, as I mentioned before. But I think if he does a second campaign, look at it from his perspective, he's got... He knows that the Ukraine war is going to be wound down, and that's going to be a terrible stain on his legacy. And then all these investigations that come out, which will stain his family, which will mire his family for generations to come with the corruption stories. So I think there's an argument there, but there's also another argument which suggests that perhaps, I don't know if this can happen, you'll correct me, but perhaps in the months coming up to the final election, the Democrats may lose their bottle. They might lose their verve for this guy who by that stage will need help even remembering what day of the week it is. I mean, just last week or just this week, he was with the Israeli president. And I think it was the worst ever mumbling that we ever saw of somebody who's clearly, you know, suffering from dementia. It was just embarrassing. So I don't know how far that Democrats can go with their guy when in 1 year's time, it might be even worse than that. You know,
well, as long as the people around him keep the cash machine going, that's the whole purpose of today's program. They'll keep them there. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. And next time, remember, Cross Talk Rules.